Good day. This is Greg with the Vermilion County News for August 13th, 2019. It's Tuesday, and as usual, we'll start with the front page of the commercial news. And our first story is entitled Looking for a Home. County Shelter Deals with Influx of Dogs, Cats. This is by Mary Wyckoff. Tilton. The Vermilion County Animal Regulations and Adoption Center is struggling with a higher than usual number of dogs and cats. Despite that, euthanasia is a last resort, and many animals are going to rescue groups and new homes. The public can take certain steps, such as adopting at shelters and spaying/neutering to help with the problem. There are solutions out there if people would just look. These are living, breathing beings, said Melanie Clausen, volunteer coordinator, community outreach for the shelter. Director Tony Van Camp said there are 357 animals in custody right now, including several in foster homes. The shelter on Catlin Tilton Road has 185 cat cages and 64 dog kennels and brings in temporary housing when needed. Since January, 1,502 animals have been brought in. Last year, 1,320 animals were brought during this same time period. That's 200 fewer animals than the shelter is seeing now. The higher number can be attributed to more people abandoning or surrendering their pets, Van Camp said, and not being honest about the animal's background when they do bring it in. Of the 1,502 animals seen this year, 380 were surrendered by owners, 507 were seized, abandoned, or held for court cases, and 426 were picked up as strays. So far this year, 311 animals have been adopted, 184 have been returned to their owners, a low 19% out of 933 animals picked up as strays or seized, and 442 of them have gone to rescues. Of the 1,502 animals, about 200 have been euthanized due to illness, aggression, or lack of space. That's down dramatically from past years when euthanasia numbers could run as high as 700. Contributing to the lower number is that the Vermilion County Animal Shelter Foundation has been treating ill or injured animals that would have been euthanized in the past. The group accepts donations and holds fundraisers to help with medical costs. Also, there's a greater push to send animals to rescue groups, and other animal groups, including the Humane Society of Danville, the Hubston Animal Rescue Team, and Champaign County, have pulled out dogs and cats for their no-kill shelters. We try not to euthanize unless we have to, Van Camp said. I'd like to place everyone. Vermilion County is an open intake shelter, which means it must accept all animals. There is no charge if an owner turns in his pet unless the animal is aggressive or has a chronic illness. Then the fee is $30. Van Camp stressed it's important for a person to be truthful, to say that this was a pet and not a stray. If an animal is a stray, it must be held for 7 days. If it's a pet, it will be held for 24 hours. Thus, it's much better for the dog or cat if it can be put on the adoption floor as quickly as possible. It has a better chance of finding a home. People are hesitant to turn in an animal, Van Camp said, but the shelter has connections and resources to help place that pet. It's especially cruel to leave animals behind when people move, as then the shelter doesn't know the animal's background, and it may take more time to place it. The shelter also is fortunate to have foster homes that will take in injured or ill animals. Van Camp had some suggestions for people who want to help the county shelter and others with their overpopulation problems. Consider adopting through a shelter rather than a breeder, he said, adding, "We've got a lot of good dogs and cats here looking for forever homes." Shelter animals appreciate that and show that loyalty and thankfulness when in a home. If you can't take care of an animal, don't get one. Consider your finances, family, lodging, time, and other issues before making that commitment. Spay and neuter your pet to prevent overpopulation. The University of Illinois comes once a week to offer low-cost surgeries. Get your animal vaccinated and keep him contained. The shelter offers low-cost rabies clinics and other services. Clausens also suggested that people keep litters of kittens or puppies at home until they're 8 weeks old. Then bring the babies in for vaccinations and take them home until the next set of shots is due. That will help overcrowding, and cats especially get stressed easily, which leads to illness. Foster homes have helped relieve overcrowding too, but those are used only for animals with medical or emotional needs. Healthy dogs are not in foster care, as that would make them more difficult for the public to see them. As for cats, she said, the problem is everywhere. If you have feral cats and you don't want to trap, call here and ask. We rent out traps, but personally do trap and release, she said. Trap and release is a process where feral cats are caught, sterilized, and returned to the wild. The shelter also provides cats to live in barns and catch mice. Releasing animals to rescue groups has helped the shelter as well. People are needed who can drive an animal to a rescue site. The foundation will pay for the gas. And next, in a related story, also from the front page of the commercial news, we have a story entitled Low-Cost Medical Care Available for Pets. This is a staff report. Tilton, the University of Illinois, has received a grant for community medicine cases to help people who are struggling to provide health care to their animals. We would love to be able to keep animals in their homes, said Melanie Clausen, volunteer coordinator, community outreach for the Vermilion County Shelter. Often people will abandon or surrender animals because they can't afford to give them medical care. This program is an effort to keep pets out of shelters. To qualify, you must be a low-income family on federal or state assistance programs such as food stamps, Social Security, unemployment, etc. For people in a temporary situation, such as loss of job, the shelter can provide some food for the animals, Clausen said. If there's anything we can do to help a temporary situation, we'd rather do that than see the animals come here, she said. All services are provided on-site at the Vermilion County Animal Regulations and Adoption Center on Catlin-Tilton Road at no charge to pet owners. However, the pet owner will need to complete a survey and provide proof of low income in order to receive the veterinary care. The veterinary staff can see up to 6 cases every Monday. Services provided include eye examinations, microchips, vaccinations, radiography, ultrasonography, dental care, urinalysis, fecal tests, skin and ear cytology, limited special surgeries, and humane euthanasia. For animals requiring blood work, blood will be collected and analyzed once the unit returns to the hospital. Pet owners will be called with results and plan moving forward once results are in. If an animal needs care beyond what can be provided, the pet owner will be advised to bring the animal to the veterinary teaching department for further workup. Financial assistance for chronic care of specialized treatment will be reviewed on a case-by-case scenario based on the animal's age, prognosis, and available funds. Appointments for this program, and also the low-cost spay-neuter program, must be made by calling the shelter at 431-2660. And our last story from the front page today is entitled New Law Expands Use of Medical Marijuana. This is by Peter Hancock from Capital News Service. Springfield. Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker celebrated a pair of new laws Monday that expand the state's medical marijuana program, including one that gives students more options for taking the drug at school. As we continue to reform state government so that it better serves its families, we must do so in a way that advances dignity, empathy, opportunity, and grace. In each of these things, this legislation moves us forward, Pritzker said at a bill signing ceremony in Springfield. One of the bills expands a 2018 law known as Ashley's Law, which authorizes schools to allow parents, guardians, or other caregivers to administer cannabis-infused products to a student who is authorized to use medical marijuana. The law is named after Ashley Surin, a Schaumburg student who uses marijuana-based products to manage a seizure disorder she developed at age 3 while undergoing chemotherapy to treat cancer she had had since age 2. She won the right to use marijuana-infused products at school in a federal court battle that was decided in January of 2018. We're so proud of her, and we're so happy this program is continuing and expanding, because it's like a miracle that our daughter is doing so well, and I can't wait to see what she does next, Ashley's mother, Maureen Surin, said during the ceremony. Since enactment of the first medical marijuana law in Illinois in 2013, Pritzker noted, more than 80,000 patients across the state have received authority to use marijuana to treat certain medical conditions. Under Senate Bill 455, which takes effect on January 1, 2020, schools will be required to allow a school nurse or administrator to administer cannabis-infused products to a student who is a registered qualifying patient. It also allows students to self-administer the medication under the direct supervision of a nurse or school administrator, and it expands a student's access to the drug to include before and after school activities. Pritzker also noted the signing of Senate Bill 2023, which he actually signed Friday, expanding and making permanent the medical cannabis pilot program, which was scheduled to sunset next year. Among other things, it adds 11 conditions for which a person may use medical cannabis, including autism, chronic pain, migraines, osteoarthritis, and anorexia nervosa. It also allows qualifying veterans access to medical marijuana as part of an opioid alternative pilot program. It also expands the list of medical professionals who can certify patients to use medical marijuana beyond medical doctors to include advanced practice, registered nurses, and physician assistants. The bill further requires state regulators to award any remaining medical marijuana dispensary licenses under the same competitive application review rules that apply under the new adult recreational marijuana law, meaning additional points are awarded to social equity applicants who come from high crime or high poverty neighborhoods, or applicants who have previously been arrested or convicted of minor marijuana offenses that are now eligible for expungement. This is yet another piece of legislation that expands equity across our state, Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton said. By making the medical cannabis program permanent, expanding access to veterans, and expanding the list of medical conditions, we are ensuring that families all across our state have access to the health care that they deserve. And now we'll turn to the obituaries for Tuesday, August 13th, 2019. Our first is for Marjorie Black. Marjorie Louise Barnett Black of Rantoul, Illinois, known to many as Marge or Margie, passed away peacefully with family at her side on August 10, 2019. Services celebrating her life will be conducted at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 17th, at Templeton Funeral Home in Paris. Burial will follow in Holt Cemetery near Chrisman, Illinois. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Friday at Templeton Funeral Home in Paris. Clifford Huddleston. Clifford M. Huddleston, 83, prominent Fairmount and Catlin area lifelong farmer, passed away at 9:47 p.m. Sunday, August 11, 2019, at Gardenview Manor on the Tilton-Catlin Road. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Thursday, August 15th, at Robison Chapel in Catlin. Reverend Matt Felisky is to officiate. Burial to follow at Sunset Cemetery in Danville. A visitation is scheduled from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, with Masonic service at 7 p.m. at Robison Chapel. Memorials to the Georgetown Fair Association or the Shriners Hospital for Children. Leroy Hensley. Leroy O. Hensley, 96, of Gifford, formerly of Rantoul, passed away at 12:55 a.m. Monday, August 12, 2019, at Country Health Nursing Home in Gifford. A visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Friday, August 16th, at Bear Family Funeral Services, 406 East Pell Street in Paxton, with Masonic rites at 11 a.m. Burial will follow in Maplewood Cemetery, Rantoul, with military honors by Rantoul American Legion Post 287. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Sharon Hayes. Sharon Hayes, 70, of Westville, passed away with family by her side on Saturday, August 10, 2019, at Carl Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of Sharon's life will be at 7 p.m. Tuesday, August 13th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Westville at 414 South State Street. Kevin Cox will officiate. Visitation will be from 3 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at the funeral home. Per Sharon's wishes, cremation rites will be accorded and a burial will be set at a later date. Mildred Verdon. Mildred Louise Verdon, 98, of Marshfield, Indiana, went to be with the Lord at 10:10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on August 11, 2019, at Williamsport Nursing and Rehabilitation Center. A visitation will be at 11 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Saturday, August 17th, at Grady Funeral Home in Williamsport, Indiana, until service time at 1 p.m. with Reverend Charles B. Anderson officiating. Interment will follow at West Lebanon Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be made to Williams Chapel. Don Wade. Don Wade, 83, of Fairmount, died at 7:06 a.m. Monday, August 12, 2019, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Robison Chapel, 103 Douglas Street, Catlin. Barbara Carmine. Barbara F. Carmine, 68, of Danville, died at 1:27 p.m. Thursday, August 8, 2019, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rort Vet Funeral Services, 3 South Hodge Street in Tilton. Tisha Estrada. Tisha Estrada, 47, of Bismarck, died Saturday, August 10, 2019. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rort Vet Funeral Services in Tilton. Daisy Garcia Hightower. Daisy Alicia Garcia Hightower, 18, of Catlin, died at 12:24 p.m. Tuesday, August 6, 2019, in Bismarck. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rort Vet Funeral Services in Tilton. Jeanette McAllister. Jeanette McAllister, 62, of Danville, died at 11:10 a.m. Thursday, August 8, 2019, at Garden View Manor in Tilton. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Wednesday at Sunset's Houghton Leisure Funeral Home, 200 East West Street in Georgetown. And that concludes the obituaries for today. We're going to turn back to the commercial news for a couple of other stories and items. The next one is entitled Early African American Cemetery Commemorated with Indiana Marker. This is by Gus Piercy with CNHI News Indiana. Thorntown, Indiana. Through the efforts of an Eagle Scout, the Indiana Historical Bureau dedicated Boone County's 8th State Historical Marker on Saturday, remembering one of the earliest black communities at the site of the Colored Cemetery. Around the Civil War, newly freed African American slaves began seeking a new place to live. According to research written by author Shannon Hudson, two Boone County communities attracted many emancipated slaves due to a large Quaker presence. Members of the Friends Church opposed slavery and had a reputation for helping slaves escape before and during the war. The Sugar Creek community was one of the communities in Boone County established in Thorntown. It was a thriving community of blacks. The community had an African Methodist Episcopal, or AME, church, a school on the northwest corner of Vine and Franklin Streets, and a black Masonic lodge. There was also a colored cemetery on County Road 825 West, just a half mile north of Indiana Route 47. Reese Thompson of Lebanon, Indiana, was looking for an Eagle Scout project in 2016 and landed on restoring this cemetery after reading a 2013 article written by Rod Rose for Boone Magazine, produced by the Lebanon Reporter. He started a colored cemetery committee to preserve the cemetery and history of the settlement. He even enlisted the help of Ball State University to bring out ground-penetrating radar to seek headstones that may have sunk. The GPR from Ball State illuminated objects such as stones or an old barbed wire fence, but it couldn't tell what most of the objects were. Thompson received a Department of Natural Resources permit and probed and dug for possible headstones. "I found seashells because African Americans would lay seashells where they're buried," Thompson said. "Also pieces of plates. It was just piles of gravel. We ended up not finding any headstones." Research shows 47 to 49 people are buried in the cemetery. Obituaries just mentioned a burial in Thorntown. The cemetery was never officially named. It was always called the Colored Cemetery. Thompson's Eagle Scout project was focused on restoring the cemetery. He raised $19,500 to do the radar, replace the stones he could find, and erect a black ornamental fence appropriate for a cemetery. Thompson earned his Eagle Scout badge in 2017, long before the fence or the large donations. He now studies public safety at IUPUI and wants to be a police officer. And from the sports pages, we have this story entitled Refusing to Lose, Speakers Capture Great Lakes Title, Advance to Shelby, by Chad Dare. Charleston, talent is important, but so is the will to win. The Danville Post 210 speakers proved that to be true on Sunday afternoon at Coach's Stadium in Charleston as they rallied to beat Beverly Lowell, the state champions from Ohio, 14-6 and 4-3 in the winner-take-all championship game of the Great Lakes Regional. "I've had more talented teams, but I've never had a team play together like this one," said Danville manager Alan Shepard. "This group just plays so well together." "And where does that come from?" "It's the players," Shepard said. "Chase Vinson, Ernest Plummer, and Logan Spicer won't let them get down, and they don't quit." After reaching the winner-take-all game the last two seasons, losing to Midland, Michigan, Berryhill both times, this time around Danville completed its mission and the Post 210 speakers booked their trip to Shelby, North Carolina for the 2019 American Legion World Series. "It doesn't matter if it is the first time or the last time. Being able to make it is special," said first baseman Chase Vinson, who has been a member of four straight Danville teams that advanced to the Great Lakes Regional. It's so much better being on this side with that banner and that trophy. Shepherd echoed those sentiments as the top teams in the region get a trophy and a banner. The only difference is the wording on the trophy and the banner. It is sweeter because of our previous attempts, Shepherd said. I told assistant coach Tyler McKenzie on the way down here that we've got a couple of those runner-up banners and we didn't need any more. Danville came into Sunday's action needing two wins over Beverly Lowell to claim the double elimination tournament. Post 210 had lost to Beverly Lowell 16-15 on Friday. In the true fashion of Speakers baseball this summer, Danville capped its title with a two-out, walk-off, bases-loaded infield single from Trevor Davis. It always has to be drama-filled for us, said Danville shortstop Ernest Plummer, who went 8-for-8 in Sunday's championship games. This was like we have done all year. We told everyone to treat this like every other game. We knew that we had enough to come back and win. That mentality didn't change when Beverly Lowell tied the winner-take-all championship game with a two-out single from Nate Brothers in the top of the seventh. I kind of knew we would get a walk-off, Plummer said. It would have been nice to finish it in the top of the seventh, but we knew we could score that last run. Plummer led off with his eighth hit, but Beverly Lowell got Coda Brucker to hit into a double play. And while most of the people wearing the blue shirts for Beverly Lowell were thinking about extra innings, the orange and green clad Speakers had other ideas. They scored their run with two outs, so I kept thinking that we would do the same thing to win this thing, said Chase Rademacher, who gave up the run and ultimately was the winning pitcher for Danville. I knew I had to get on base for my team after giving up the run. Rademacher stroked a single to left, and Vincent followed with a single to right. I knew once Vincent got on that, something good was going to happen, Shepherd said. Beverly Lowell elected to intentionally walk Spicer, who was 2-for-3, in the contest with a solo homer in the second. They walked Logan, which was absolutely the right call, but when you walk Logan to get to Trevor Davis, Shepherd said, I will take that. I knew Trevor would put the ball into play. Davis, who had been 1-for-3, laced the first pitch he saw from Beverly Lowell pitcher Brett Grant Gandy down the third base line. Kurt Taylor made a remarkable stop, and he attempted to beat Vincent to third base for the force out. Both players dove for the bag, and Vincent was there first. Rademacher touched home, and the celebration ensued down the first base line, with Davis being swarmed under by his teammates. It's very tense, Davis said. I just wanted to put the ball in play and help my team win. My approach was simple. See ball, hit ball. But that was only half of the play. Vincent's sprint from second to third was also very important. It was a hard hit ball and Taylor did his job, Vincent said. The kid made a great stop and it was a bang-bang play. Shepherd pointed out that Vincent's baseball intelligence was also a factor. Vincent used his baseball smarts, Shepherd said. He made the right read and slid in the inside part of the bag. Just as important on Sunday was the pitching performances from Dalton Dalby, who got the win in the first game, and Elijah Harden, who started and went 5 innings in the winner-take-all game. Danville will play Destrehan, Louisiana, post 366, in the opening game of the American Legion World Series on Thursday in Shelby, North Carolina. First pitch is set for 9 a.m., and the game can be seen on ESPN3, an online broadcast. And lastly, from the community briefs for Danville, we have Library Plans Movie. The teen back-to-school movie will feature Tom Hardy as a journalist whose body merges with that of an alien to become a superhero. The film will be shown at 5 p.m. Wednesday in the first floor meeting room, and it's for teens ages 12 to 18. And that's all the time we have for today, Tuesday, August 13th, 2019. This has been the Vermilion County News, and my name is Greg. It's been a pleasure to read for you today. I hope you have a wonderful day. Take care.